Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive. Well, today is a little bit sad because this is our last October episode, our Halloween episode. So this is coming out on the 30th. Fate didn't like us enough to make it the 31st.
I know, kind of rude.
But that's okay. We'll live. I have actually a lot of horror to talk about in this intro. So I need to hand it over to you before I completely take over.
Okay, fair. I actually have watched quite a few horror movies, none that I feel like I need to go super deep into. I, you know, decided to watch a random Shudder movie the other day. This one was called Malum. And I hated it.
Did not
enjoy it. Found out after it was a remake, which I feel like Shudder does that a lot and you don't necessarily realize it.
Do you know if it was like a from a foreign film? They do that a lot.
I think it was.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think people tend to like the original a lot better. But that was just like a random one I watched yesterday while I was doing some work. And then I watched two big ones. I watched Coraline, which is a big one in the sense that it's a very big name and also not necessarily a horror film, but also kind of a horror film. I mean, it's considered a PG children's film, which also is not what I would consider it either.
Right. I know.
A little much.
I love movies like that, though, that are like the in-between. Well, those are the kind of movies as a kid that I ate up. You know what I mean? Because I was the weird kid that like watched too intense of horror like way early on.
Very true.
So then like the spooky, scary kids stuff was like just so fun to me. Like everything, like Courage the Cowardly Dog was my shit.
Yep.
And Coraline. It's cool that you watched it older, but it's just – it was – I think the reason it's special for me is because of the nostalgia of when I watched it for the first time and being a kid when I watched it.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites, but it rides a lot on nostalgia. So
No, I already want to watch it again in a very like cozy, rainy environment because it is such a cozy movie. Being the stop motion and all of that just makes it have an extra cozy vibe.
Yeah.
But then I, on a very opposite side of things here, I watched The Exorcist start to finish for the very first time. And I won't go too much into my thoughts and feelings on this because we'll go down a rabbit hole. But it's one of those movies that, you know, if you don't know, obviously came out in 1973, where I can look at it and be like, ah, yes, for the time, terrifying, revolutionary, like gotta respect what it did for the genre. But watching it for the first time in 2025, it's fine. I'm gonna get roasted.
You're being like, how do I put this delicately?
It simply wasn't my favorite movie. It's just very slow.
It's very slow, the first half.
Yeah. Just like a lot of people walking around for a solid half hour, which is, you know, good for them.
Man, I watched a couple movies. I have so many fun things to talk about here. First of all, I started Little Nightmares 3. Want to shout that out.
Yes.
Which is everything that I wanted it to be. Not and more, I'll say. You know the phrase? It's not exceeded my expectations, but it's just exactly what I wanted, you know?
Right.
Which is great. So I'm like halfway through that at the moment. And excited to finish that up today. I should be finishing it today. And then I just wanted to shout out the fact that I want to watch a certain movie, and I don't know how you'll feel about this or if you're going to.
What?
I think we both have similar thoughts on the first movie, but I really want to watch The Strangers Chapter 2.
Oh, hell yeah, I want to watch it.
Because you didn't love the first.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
But I need to know what they're doing. Like, because the first one was so bad, that's why I want to watch the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are saying that the first one was just to set up the other two. Because if you don't know, Strangers Chapter 1 is basically a really, really terrible remake of the original Strangers movie, which it wasn't really marketed as, I don't think. But people are saying that's because it was the setup for 2 and 3. So I better see something good.
Right. It seems like it's going to go, like, it's going to take on a new plot of its own with these second two in the trilogy. And I'm like, what in the world is the plot?
Right.
I don't know. I'm kind of, one of the things that I was frustrated with the first Strangers Chapter One was the fact that they set up the town to seem like, like the whole town was like weird vibes and like almost felt like supernatural haunt, like something's going on with the town.
Yes.
And I was like, that's different from the original. Like the original is just like basic, you know, normal world, strangers in a cabin and you get attacked by psycho strangers.
Exactly.
So I'm like, I kind of am hoping that they go lean into like a supernatural element just to make that make sense. And it's like, you just got to do something completely new if you're going to make a trilogy. Cause like, what are you doing?
No, exactly. I think, cause I was really like frustrated with that exact same thing because I'm like, why did they set up all of these weird characters? But then it's like, oh, well, that's going to be what 2 and 3 probably delve into. And it, yeah, the town had a really cool vibe. And I was kind of hopeful when it first started. And then the entire meat of the film happened, and if anyone who watched my reaction to that knows that the thing that pissed me off in that movie the most was the CGI'd blood on the door. I've never been so angry.
Forgot until this moment, but now I'm having like a visceral memory of you being so pissed off at that.
It looks so bad, like I can't.
But
it's
so random. Like, why did they do that?
Like,
you don't need to do that.
You don't need to do that. And if you are gonna do it, please do better. Just do better.
You have the budget.
You clearly have the budget. I don't know. That was just like something I got irrationally angry about.
Yeah. Well, I saw the first one in theaters with my sister, so that made it fun. Like, just it was the type of bad movie that was fun. And it was so funny because like the people in the audience with us were also like, what the fuck? Like audibly being like, what is this movie? So it was a fun experience. I really wanted to catch the second one in theaters as well, but I don't know if it's going to have a very long run, and I'm not going to be able to like get it in theaters until I get back from San Diego where we're going to TwitchCon.
True.
So I don't know. We'll see. It's probably going to be even worse than what my experience could have been in the theaters when I end up probably watching it at home.
Which reminds me, like, real quick, there's so many horror movies that are either coming out or out, like, brandy new right now. Because I want to see The Conjuring. I want to see him regardless of how bad the reviews are.
Right.
We've got Black Phone 2. We've got Strangers Chapter 2. There's a bunch of stuff coming out right now, which makes sense because it's October and this is when they're going to be coming out. But yeah,
this is why it's our favorite month.
Exactly.
I do have a controversial opinion, though. I'm not a huge fan of The Black Phone.
I don't think that's controversial. I didn't love that movie. I liked it, and I'm excited to see what the second one does, but it's not like one of my favorites. It's, I don't know, it's like kind of like It, which is funny because the story is actually written by Stephen King's son.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah, like because it's based on a short story that I still haven't read, but I know his son wrote it.
I think I just went into it expecting straight horror, and I think it leaned a lot more thriller than I expected.
Absolutely.
Now that I have that in mind, I'll probably enjoy the sequel.
Yeah, that's fair. And does, like, because it weirdly got paranormal too. Like, it's like, it is a weird vibe.
Yeah. And then I did watch a couple movies as well this week. I watched Jeepers Creepers.
I saw that you did that.
And, I completely forgot until I received a text from my friend warning me that this is the movie with
I was shocked.
Yes, this is the movie with the evil director. There's an evil director attached to this movie. And I freaking knew that because at one point, I don't know, months ago, I was looking up movies to cover on the podcast and I saw like, oh, Jeepers Creepers. And I looked into the background because we cover background on the podcast. And I was like, oh, like this director, what the fuck? Maybe I should do this for the podcast then. And then it just went out of my mind. And then for some reason, I was like, oh, when I was looking at like stuff to react to in October, it popped up again, Jeepers Creepers. And I was like, oh yeah, this is like, my friend was scarred by this as a child. Like, I really want to watch this. I forgot about this. My brain is just mush this month. Like, I've been doing too much. And yeah, that's unfortunate. The comments actually aren't as, I think I've seen a couple that are in, like being informative about what happened there. But it sucks because like this was genuine. It was like a great movie and it's just as annoying now.
Right. And two things on that. And one was like, I saw you did it and I was like, I was surprised for a moment because I was like, oh, I know we talked about how we weren't going to do this. And like then she was like, I'll just do it as a reaction instead. But that makes sense. That actually does check out because you are a busy girl right now. Also, like I am someone who comes from a place of like, you can still respect art even if people attached to it are bad. I know. And I think it does get, you know, it gets a little bit cloudy. And I understand that it's controversial for a lot of people. But I feel like you still got to have some room for being able to appreciate it in some sense. I don't know.
People always are like very split on how you should handle those types of situations. So we're like, that's why we were like, oh, maybe we just shouldn't. And then I freaking go and do a reaction. What the hell?
That is so funny. Yeah, no. It's tricky.
Yeah, I never – apparently I need to look into background stuff before doing reactions. I never do that. I only do it for the podcast. But now maybe I should start for reactions
apparently.
As well.
Apparently.
But then the other thing I filmed that is going to be coming out this week is The Babadook.
Wait, you hadn't seen that?
No.
Whoa.
I know. It's there's like a few movies here and there where you'll have that reaction to me not having seen it. But it's definitely one of those. And it was so good.
Yeah. It's funny. I have seen it, but I don't remember anything about it because it was one of the very first horror movies I watched back in like 2015. So it's been 10 years since I've seen that
Depending on if you want to do a Get Out situation where it's like, oh, maybe I will film a reaction to it because you don't remember enough, I would say it would be a great reaction.
Yeah. I might because I remember like what the overall theme of the movie is because it's like, you know, like that's very – like everyone knows.
It's very heavy.
What the movie kind of is getting at, but I don't remember like any of the logistics of how it works.
Yeah, there's just one scene at the end that made it like pulled the whole thing together, and I was just like, oh, I get it. Like, I get why this
is
such a great movie. And it honestly, I don't know, not to knock on either of our intelligence, but if I watched this 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't have picked up on what, in my opinion, made the movie so special in the end.
Yeah, for me,
so it's
also
cool to rewatch when you like have a fully developed brain too.
When your brain be working, yeah,
yeah.
No, also it's the same thing with Get Out. Where when I watched this movie, I was watching it with a group of like college kids in a lounge. So God knows I didn't absorb anything.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and then my last thing I need to talk about. I watched Scream with my brother, and it was his first time watching the movie.
Heck yeah.
This was a big deal for me because Scream is one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, I've forced my boyfriend to watch it. I forced my friends in high school to watch it. I forced every single one of my siblings to watch it as soon as they hit the age of 14 because that's just the age that me and my mom decided is good enough for this Perfect. One. And so he hit the age of 14 and I'm like, it's time. It is time. And it's so sad because I'm like, I don't think I have anyone else to force this upon now. But he loved it and it made me so happy. Like at the end, when the movie ended, he was like, literally, this is a direct quote. He was like, I'm in shock of how good that was.
Yeah.
And I was like, thank God you get it. Because it's hard. Like, it's just a testament to how good that movie is that a 14-year-old boy in 2025 is like, dang, that's so good.
It really, like, oh, it's such a good franchise. And, like, honestly, I'm going to say I had the same reaction as him the first time I watched it. I only watched Scream the first time a few years ago. And I remember being like, oh,
yeah,
this is good. Like, it's not just, like, this fluke. Like, these movies are so loved because they're so good.
Yeah. That first movie specifically is just, like, it's what I wish I could be when it comes to writing, like screenwriting. Mm. Like, that is the most perfect script I've ever seen in my life.
Right.
And then the most perfect cast to pull it off. Like, it's just it doesn't miss a single beat.
Yeah. It's so good. No, I just want to go sit down and watch it.
I know.
I love it
so much. I know.
It's
so freaking. I literally, like, I'm not even kidding. I think I want to, just for fun, like bucket list before I die, I want to just memorize the entire script. I want that to be my party trick.
You just start reciting Scream and you don't stop the whole time. You do the whole
movie. No, I don't.
Movie.
Every time someone asks me something, like I respond with the next line of the script and they're like, oh, what?
Oh, she's still going.
Okay. So yes, even though I've been crazy busy Well, half of the reason I have so much to talk about here is because I was getting ahead on filming some reactions. And then I was still, thank God, I was able to fit in Scream with my brother in the midst of everything else I'm trying to get done. And it was so worth it. But now it's time to talk about another movie that I watched recently called House of a Thousand Corpses.
Whoop, whoop.
Okay, I don't even remember what I wrote in my like background section of my little script that I wrote for this episode, but I'm just going to start by saying when I watched this the first time, I was like, just to be completely honest, I was like, I wish I had the time to find something else for this this episode.
Oh.
And I didn't have the time, so I was like, I'm going to make this work.
Oh, I mean, I've been there. I've been there. I'm not going to lie.
Right, right.
It happens sometimes.
It happens. And, but then when I was like, rewatching while writing the script, I realized that this is going to be a very fun episode.
Heck yes.
Thank God. But okay, let me read off what I wrote for like this movie background section. And then if I have to add anything, I will before we get into it.
Perfect.
So House of a Thousand Corpses was written and directed by Rob Zombie. This was his directorial debut. And Rob Zombie is more well known as a singer. I knew like his name. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
Name?
Yeah. I was going to say like, why do I know that name?
That's so interesting because yeah, I knew his name. I knew he was a singer. I knew he was in like heavy metal, which is just not my genre, but he's big enough that you just know his name apparently. Yeah. And he was the frontman of a band called White Zombie. But then he also released music as a solo artist after being part of the band. And I actually recognized one of his songs when I took a look at his discography because I was like, why do I know his name? I must know one of his songs. And I did. It's called Dragula. And the part that I know is just him screaming, Dragula. So that's how that goes.
Love that.
Curious.
Thank you so much.
And a lot of his music was inspired by horror movies.
Cool.
He would go on to write and direct a good amount of horror movies after this one. This House of a Thousand Corpses being his first. And one of them is the Halloween remake that came out in 2007. He was the writer, director behind that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
This movie, so
I'm laughing
at what I wrote here before I even started writing the script, you know? This is what I said. I said, I honestly don't know what to think of it. I admire the risks that it takes and the grittiness and darkness that it captures, but it leans into the exploitation horror genre, which is not my type of horror. I don't know if you know. Can you put like a, do you understand exploitation horror, like what that is?
I could not put it into words.
Right. Okay. So it's basically, I like knew the vibe, but I also looked up the definition in case to just explain what that means. It's basically a horror genre that heavily leans into shock value by like portraying like different taboo topics. Okay.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That's just never been my favorite type of horror. So this was interesting. But yeah, this whole movie, this whole thing feels like a fever dream to me. And I did kind of want to wake up. But I decided, you know, at the end of the day, did I have the time to pick anything else? No. So I am dragging all of you down into this fever dream with me. You're so welcome. Happy Halloween.
Yeah, let's go.
So first off, let me explain that this movie has like a lot of random vibey quick flash montages that are like, that are like horror candy. I don't know how to explain it, but it's like little bites of horror candy throughout the movie. It usually is used as like a transition from one scene to the next, but it just has nothing to do with what's going on in the movie. It's just random.
Gotcha.
But it looks cool and it's like leans into the exploitation, like shocking images situation.
Right. Okay.
But for the most part, I am like skipping over those for the podcast episode just because it's like they're just so random.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't and I'll include those, but yeah. So we open on a little infomercial that's hosted by a guy named Captain Spaulding dressed as a clown and we're watching on this grainy black and white TV. And Spaulding goes, "Howdy, folks. You like blood, violence, and freaks of nature? Well, come on down to Captain Spaulding's Museum of Monsters and Madmen. See the Alligator Boy ride my famous murder ride. Most of all, don't forget to take home some of my tasty fried chicken." And
I'm gonna go.
Murder and chicken? Not a bad combo.
Yeah. Murder, chicken, monsters, alligators. Mm-hmm. I don't know about
it. It sounds exciting.
But it does sound like a good time.
Exactly. And on the screen at the bottom, it flashes exit 13 off Route 1 at Ruggsville.
Exit 13.
And I know. It's like every little thing that this movie can do to be like Halloween, spooky spooks, it like does it all.
Okay, I love it.
So from there, we cut to Captain Spaulding's Museum of Monsters and Mad Men. There's a neon sign, and then a bit of a darker, grittier sign next to it advertises fried chicken and gasoline. And when we pan out to see the whole gas station horror museum situation, I can't lie, it looks so cool.
Okay.
Like, I'd go out of my way to stop at this gas station on a road trip. Like, you gotta go there. It's so weird.
It's like the Buc-ee's for horror fans.
Exactly. Exactly.
Perfect.
Oh my God. Speaking of, first Buc-ee's is hitting Wisconsin soon.
So exciting.
Yes.
I've never been to one.
If you're confused, that is where I live.
True that.
I don't just hyperfixate on Wisconsin. Oh, okay. So the date flashes at the bottom of the screen and it reads October 30th. 1977, mm-hmm. which is actually kind of perfect because this episode is being released on October 30th, so it makes sense. The vibes are here. Inside the gas station, Captain Spaulding, the clown owner of this establishment, is having a brain rot conversation. This script, it's like you can just feel me being like, I don't fucking know what they're doing right now. Like, what are they even talking about? No, but he's having like some brain rot conversation with some old man. Like, he seems to be a familiar customer of his. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know if I don't have enough brain cells or too many brain cells to explain what they're talking about. But the major points of this conversation are about a signed book of pictures of naked women, and somehow it's related to some guy that they think is an idiot that hangs out at a local fruit stand, who apparently once was admitted to the hospital for having a Planet of the Apes doll stuck up his ass.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and say that you have too many brain cells. Yeah. I think that's pretty clear.
Oh my God. This conversation was a wild opener to the movie. As soon as this movie started, I was like, okay, here we go, I guess.
Alrighty, yeah, I guess this is the one that I'm covering.
So yeah, welcome to the movie House of a Thousand Corpses. This is the vibe. So anyways, this old dude whose name is Stucky has to go use the bathroom.
Stucky, the frick? Okay.
Stucky Buc-ee's. Oh.
Stucky Buc-ee's. What does that mean? I don't know.
That's the beauty of this movie. You can just say things and it makes sense.
Okay, perfect.
You know, it fits.
You don't got to ask me twice.
Like, the movie knows what Stucky Buc-ee's means.
It does, you know? Doesn't it? You know what? I get it. I'm here.
Yeah, he's got to go to the bathroom. So Spaulding gives him the giant middle finger figurine that has the bathroom key on it. And he goes on his way. And while Stucky's in the bathroom, two guys in ski masks, one in a ski mask and the other in a monkey mask, burst into the gas station with guns pointed at Spaulding. They start screaming at him to put his hands up or they'll do, in parentheses, insert lame threat. Like, there are just a lot of threats flying.
I see.
And Spaulding puts his hands up, but he makes sure to make them both of his hands, like, pointed with middle fingers. Like, he's, like, not that scared. He's just like, fuck you guys. What are you trying to do right now? He's unimpressed. And Ski Mask orders Monkey to go get Stucky out of the bathroom and drag him in here.
That's a sentence.
Yeah, I know. And so Ski Mask walks up to the counter and then points the gun right up in Spaulding's face and goes, all right, Pippi, hand over the cash box and I might leave your brains inside your skull. And Spaulding responds, well, I'll tell you what, Ski King, why don't you just take your mama home some chicken and then I won't have to stuff my boot all up in your ass. And then Ski Mask's rebuttal is, I don't like chicken. And, like, he seems really upset about it. Like, I think the dude has chicken trauma. Like, he really doesn't like chicken. He's like, I can't do that.
He's just vegetarian.
You know what? Rob Zombie, who wrote this and everything, he's, like, very, very vegan or vegetarian and, like, does a lot of, like, animal conservation stuff.
Oh.
Maybe there's a message here to be had.
Hey, maybe.
At this point, Monkey gets back with Stucky, and Monkey's fumbling around with some files for some reason. I don't know what those files that he now has in his hands have to do with anything.
Right.
And Stucky is just just as bored and annoyed by this robbery attempt as Spalding is. Neither of them are very concerned here. Now Ski Mask starts counting up to 10, like getting back to the point, demanding that cash box.
Yep.
Again, Spalding does not give a shit. When Ski Mask starts at 1, Spalding goes, fuck your mama. And then Ski Mask says 2, and Spalding goes, fuck your sister. And Monkey is freaking out now because this robbery isn't going to plan. Like, they're like, why the fuck are these guys not scared of us? And he's like shakily got his gun pointed at Stucky, and he's whining, what are we going to do? Like, are we really going to kill them? Is basically, they're supposed to be bluffing, and they're like,
right.
But that's when Stucky realizes something. He's like, hey, I know you. You work at the hardware store, right? Richard Wick, right?
Oh.
Like, he recognizes Monkey.
Uh-oh.
And then Stucky starts singing a local tune that apparently goes around town about Richard Wick called Little Dick Wick. And it really hurts Richard's feelings. He Aww. Pulls his mask off and he's like, stop it, stop it. I hate that song. So now, since they know it's Richard, Ski Mask takes his mask off and is like, fuck it. He's about to pull his trigger. But that's when someone new comes crashing into the place.
Ooh.
It's a person with a giant bobblehead mask.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain this. It's like this. Have you seen the live action Scooby-Doo? With
yeah.
the spooky island.
Yeah.
Aren't there like huge masks like that, like bobblehead masks, and they have like weird designs on them? And
that sounds familiar.
I don't know. It's hard to explain, but.
Sounds like a lot of this movie is hard to explain. So, well, you know, yes. That's okay. That's okay. That's the way it's going to go today.
Exactly. This is why it's a fever dream. Like, it doesn't quite make sense.
Perfect.
So, yeah, giant bobblehead comes in. It's like the mask itself is white and painted with like this big smiling face with red triangles also drawn on all over the place. I don't know. And
okay.
I apologize again for my inability to explain what the hell this guy has on. But anyways, this guy has a sledgehammer. That's what we really care about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I care about that.
And he doesn't hesitate to use it on Ski Mask. He smashes his head right in, just walks up and smash, smash. And Spalding pulls a gun out and shoots Monkey through the forehead before Monkey can even process what's happening. And just like that, you know, the robbers are pretty much dead. Like, Monkey's dead. I think Ski Mask is just like in pain with bleeding out from his head.
Oh, okay.
And the bobblehead mask dude takes his mask off, and he's got like a crazy maniacal laughter going for him.
Mm.
And Spalding is currently taking a hit off of the smoke of his gun. So they're having fun.
Good for him.
Ski Mask is still alive on the ground, bleeding and disoriented. So Bobblehead and Spalding stand over him, and Spalding goes, most of all, fuck you, before shooting him in the head too. And that is like an official death for our attempted robbers.
Oh, okay.
From here, we go into like a little title sequence for the movie that's paired with very disturbing images and honestly a pretty great song. It matches the vibe perfectly, and it's called House of a Thousand Corpses by Rob Zombie. He wrote it for All right. the movie.
That, you know what? That makes sense.
Yeah. When the credits are over, we cut to a car driving down a road.
Hey.
Our favorite classic horror movie formula continues.
Here we go.
And in this car, we've got 4 people. 2 girls are sleeping in the back. They're all like late teens, early 20s is my guess. 2 girls sleeping in the back. Their names are Denise and Mary. And then in the passenger seat, we've got Jerry. And at the wheel, we've got Bill. And Bill is played by Mr. Rainn Wilson.
What? What? Are you serious?
Which, like, I forget, what year did The Office start?
Like, 03?
Oh, this came out in 03. So it must have been real, like, maybe right before getting into The Office.
My brain just exploded. What do you mean Rainn Wilson is in this movie?
Mine did too. I was like, what are you doing here?
That is
like
insane.
You should be working at a paper company right now.
Actually,
you should be starting working there very soon, because I thought that this movie and that show was like very close together based on the timing.
For a little context here, I'm one of those people that's watched The Office like 15 times, and Rainn Wilson was my boss for like a short period of time.
Yes.
So like, this is blowing my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I love when this happens. I love so much when this happens. Literally, it's giving. I'm currently watching the show Firefly, and in one of the episodes, I saw a little baby Zac Efron, 13 years old, and I was like, "What the hell?" Like, I love when stuff like that happens.
Right? It's so exciting for no reason, really. It just is.
Rainn Wilson, Bill driving the car, and Jerry's flipping through a magazine where he's reading about Charles Manson's cult, and he's like, "Man, some of these Manson chicks are hot." And Bill isn't paying attention because, of course, he's realizing that they're low on gas. Wouldn't you know? They get into a little argument because apparently at the last gas stop, Jerry only put, quote, $2 or $3 of gas in the tank.
Good job.
So Bill's like, what the hell? Also, Bill is doing way more driving on this road trip than anyone else is, and that's got him annoyed too. But one of their problems looks like it's going to be solved when they see a sign for Captain Spaulding's.
Ah.
We cut to them pulled up next to a pump at Spaulding's. Bill tells Jerry that he'll pump the gas and that Jerry should go inside and see if this place is worth checking out. And like I said, this place actually looks awesome. So Jerry steps inside for about 2 seconds before he comes back out and tells Bill he's got to see this. So Bill asks if it's worth waking up the girls and breaking out the camera. And Jerry's like, hell yeah. So the whole friend group heads inside to look around, and this place, like, inside is like an antique horror shop. There's so much to look at. It's like so crowded with so many cool random things. And they're all taking their time looking at every little thing. Meanwhile, Spaulding is literally still mopping up the blood of his murder, but, like, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, whatever.
And Bill has a little notebook that he's taking notes in because him and his friends are basically on a road trip for information because they want to write a book on weird roadside attractions.
Oh, hell yeah!
Isn't that so – like, I'd read that book. Like, they want to, like, road trip across the U.S. and, like, just find all the weird shit on the side of the road, you know, and write a book about it.
Does this book exist? Did somebody write one of these?
It must.
Because, like, I would read that.
Yeah, and go to a lot of those places. That'd be fun. I'd love to do, like, a proper big road trip one day.
No, same. Because, like, I did one where I drove from California to Rhode Island, but it was, like, we just got to get where we need to go because my dad was with me and he just needed to get back because work. So we didn't really stop and look at a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But I would love to just, like, do one of those road trips where you're like, hey, let's just stop here. This looks cool.
Yeah. Even in an RV. That would be so fun.
Oh, my God. Now I just want to do that.
Well, we will.
Okay, we will. We're adding that to the list of things we're going to do. We come up with like
are you free this week?
Yeah.
This week?
No, wait.
We can fit that in.
this week. I'm not getting on a plane in a few hours. It's fine. We can also do that.
So Bill starts asking Spaulding some questions and finds out that he's been running this place for decades after taking it over from his dad. But then Spaulding just randomly is like, anyways, let me ask you something. How come you're asking so many jackassy questions?
Oh.
So Bill explains the book that he and his friends are working on, and he sums it up with, you know, just about the crazy shit that you see driving across the country. And Spaulding is like, I don't drive across the country. And Bill goes, yeah, but like if you did. and Spaulding retorts, I don't.
Oh my God.
So Bill just keeps trying to, like, get him to understand the rhetorical possibility.
Right.
Spaulding starts laughing and steps up from behind the counter and is like, oh, I know what your problem is. And Bill is laughing along with him, confused, but is like, okay, what's my problem? And Spaulding says, y'all think us folk from the country is real funny, like, don't ya?
Well, you're acting really dumb right now. So yeah.
Like, what? Like, you're not representing the community right now. Like, you should. Like, what's going on?
Oh, my God. Like, I already want to slap him. Like, oh, my God. You get what I'm saying.
No. And you know he does. It's like, I hate this type of person. Or it's like, stop. Just stop.
It's like,
aren't you tired?
It's the kind of person that, like, mimics what a person says, like as a joke. It's that kind of energy, which nobody likes.
No. Now, at this point, Bill is concerned and, like, backing away slowly and calling for Jerry while Spaulding just keeps spewing different country folk stereotypes and, like, calling Bill an asshole. And Bill's like, no, I'm not trying to make fun of you. I'm, like, really interested in this place. I want to write about it. And it all culminates into Spaulding giggling and going, gotcha. It's just a joke. Like, I'm obviously just, like, joking, haha.
So funny.
We cut to the girls coming out of the bathroom, and Jerry's like, oh, finally, we paid for the tickets. It's time to go on the murder ride. And both of the girls aren't feeling it. They don't want to go on. I think it's just late at night and they're supposed to actually be back home. I don't know if it's like the end of the road trip, but they're like almost home.
Gotcha.
But of course, we end up cutting to like the entire friend group secured in a little ride cart on a coaster ride that is being hosted by Spalding himself.
Ooh.
So this little ride is a tour of all the different horror displays that Spalding has put together, scenes with animatronics in them, and then Spalding like tells a little story at each stop. So we have the story of Albert Fish, a cannibalistic child killer who enjoyed spanking with nail-studded paddles.
I was into it, and then I was less into it.
Yeah, it's odd. Like, and then these are like real serial killers that they are like making attraction animatronics of. It's a little odd.
I thought it was just like a fun spooky Halloween thing.
Oh yeah.
And now I don't like it anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then we have Ed Gein, cannibalistic murderer specializing in female corpses. Also, it was at this point that I realized the cart that we're in doesn't move by itself on this track. It's being pushed by Spalding's assistant.
Oh.
And the guy who like came in with the sledgehammer in the opening scene.
Right.
So that's just hilarious to me. He's just in the back pushing us along.
Whee!
The next scene on the ride is introduced as one of the town's local heroes, S. Quentin Quayle, a.k.a. Dr. Satan. So here's the monologue. Murderer, torturer, but most of all, master surgeon. Dr. Satan was an intern at Willows County Mental Hospital, nicknamed Weeping Willows for the never-ending cries of death. Through primitive brain surgery, Dr. Satan believed that he could create a race of superhumans from the mentally ill. Vigilante justice prevailed. They took his ass out and hung him. And that infamous hanging tree is no more than a stone's throw away from where y'all's asses is now seated. But the next day, his body was found to be missing. No trace of Dr. Satan has ever been discovered.
Ooh.
So that's it. That's the ride. It ends there.
Oh. Okay.
Three displays.
Three displays. Wow. Three horrible displays that should not exist at all.
Yeah. So afterwards, the guys are like really pumped about the ride. They thought it was awesome, but the girls just want to keep it moving. Get out of here. Before that, though, Denise heads over to a payphone to call and check in with her dad. And we cut to like a really cutesy Halloween-y neighborhood where kids are going trick-or-treating. And we see her dad answer the phone in his little cozy house. And Denise tells him that they've stopped at a place called Captain Spalding's. And it turned into this whole big thing. So they're kind of behind schedule. I guess she's expected to be home at a certain hour tonight. And her dad takes a seat in his living room, and on the TV, a news channel is reporting the disappearance of five local cheerleaders. So like, wink, wink, what could have happened there? Like, is this group next? I don't know.
It's crazy. That's a crazy leap that you're making right there.
Yeah. Back with the main group, Jerry gets Spalding to draw him a little doodle that's supposed to be a map to this hanging tree that both he and Bill really want to check out again, like for the sake of their book. So Spalding draws a quick little map and then hands him some complimentary fried chicken and tells him not to let the door hit him on the way out. So like, thank you so much. So they hit the road again. It's dark and raining down pretty hard now. And coming up on the side of the road, they see a hitchhiker. It's a girl with long, crimped blonde hair, a cowboy hat, and an umbrella. And she's trying to wave them down. And Bill's the one to be like, ugh, like we can't leave this girl out in the rain. Let's pick her up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, is there any situation where you would pick up a hitchhiker? Like, do you think you could be fooled by the state of a person or the innocence that a person might give off in their stereotypical appearance, anything like that?
I don't know. It's just like, just knowing that sometimes women and children are used as like a trap. Right. It's like, I feel like I want to say no.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? There could be a situation. If I saw like a kid, like,
with a kid, it feels different, right? I don't think I would for a woman. Mm-hmm. But if it's a little kid, I might at least stop and roll down the window and be like, hey, what's going on? And like call the police.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But then it's like, do you let the kid, like it's raining, do you let the kid sit in your car? And then what if it's possessed by the devil and then you have a knife in your throat?
Well, okay, that's not even where I was going with this, but you know, it is a possibility. So
it's always a possibility. You never know.
I think we just drive.
I know. I would at the very least call. Yeah. If it was like someone who looks like, you know, there's been stories of like people who are like bloody and escaping. They're a victim and they're escaping someone who's attacked them and they're trying to get like flag a car down to help. But then obviously a lot of people keep going because they're like, oh my God, scary. But I would at the very least, please call the police and be like, hey, there's a, you know.
Yeah.
But in this situation where it's just like there doesn't seem to be anything wrong with her, I personally think I would just drive past.
Yeah. I agree.
So anyways, they do pick her up, of course, and she gets in and sits up front between Bill and Jerry. And we find out that her name is Baby. And she's just trying to get home like a couple miles up the road. And so obviously they ask her if she knows about where the legendary hanging tree is around here. And she's like, of course, that's right by my house. I can show you. Then all of a sudden, we, the audience, see a man in what appears to maybe be like a bear suit hiding in the bushes on the side of the road with a shotgun.
Oh, okay.
As you do. Yeah. And he takes a shot at one of the tires and hits a bullseye. They have to pull over and now this car is out of commission. Like,
oh no.
Also, they didn't realize the damage was from a gunshot. They couldn't hear it over the rain. So they think they've just randomly blown a tire.
Fair.
And it shouldn't be too big a deal because they should have a spare tire, a brand new one that Bill recently bought and specifically asked Jerry to put in the car.
Oh, no.
But of course, Jerry forgot.
Oh, Jerry. It's always Jerry.
It is. Piled back in the car, the whole group is arguing with Jerry, you know, like, how could you forget the spare tire, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, Baby, like, randomly hears a rock song that she loves on the radio and just cranks the music up to, like, a blaring level.
Hell yeah.
And she's just dancing around, having a grand old time. But our girlies in the back are done with her. They, like, scream to turn the radio off, which Bill does. And then Baby's like, hey, we could walk to my house from here. And my brother's got a tow truck. He can come get your car. Bill is the one that leaves with Baby to head to her house because he just tells everyone else to stay in the car. No use everyone getting drenched. You know, he'll go. And then the brother will come back for them and pick up the car.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah. Now, I gotta give credit where credit is due in this movie. The locations are so fun. The exterior shot of Baby's house in this rundown, it's like this rundown Victorian house with a turret. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
And then there's a cutscene which we're supposed to assume takes place inside this house that shows a man that we don't know screaming and preaching to a bunch of girls that he's got tied up and gagged. And we can assume that these are the missing cheerleaders.
Yes.
And he's just like screaming nonsense about like his brain, how his brain is frozen and that he needs to, quote, break free from this culture of mechanical reproductions and the thick incrustations dying on the surface.
The crusties.
So anyways, Baby and Bill arrive at the house and the porch is covered in doll heads, like all just plastered on the wall.
No.
And Baby's like, hee hee ha, do you like my dolls?
No.
And Bill's like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, sure, cool. And they get up to the front door to find it locked. So Baby's like, I've got to go around back. You wait here. And while Baby's gone and Bill's looking around at all these dolls, he's starting to feel a little spooked, which is perfect for Baby as she jump scares him opening up and coming through that front door. He doesn't find the scare funny. He tells her not to do that. But she just laughs and is like, you ain't seen nothing yet. Oh. And he asks where her brother is. Like, that's why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, he's already on the way to help them. You come inside and get toasty with me. So, like, what would, like, no, right? But then also, where else am I going to go?
No, I would be like, wait, what do you mean he's already on the way? Like, did you talk to him? Like, we didn't.
Right.
When did you talk to him? I didn't see that.
And would I not see him pull out of the driveway?
Yeah, like, I would have seen
I'm at the front of the house. Yeah, but he's just like, okay.
There's dolls on the porch. Why would you go inside? There's dolls on the porch.
You know what? Not to reference Scooby-Doo again. I do love Scooby-Doo, though, and I always will. This girl, Baby, she very much reminds me of the crimped blonde hair girl from Spooky Island as well, that kind of like tricks Shaggy. Like that's kind of the vibe.
Oh my God, love it.
So anyways, back to the car with Jerry, Denise, and Mary. Mary thinks that she can hear something outside the car, so she turns on the headlights and all three of them scream at the sight of Rufus. So this is Baby's brother.
Oh! Mm-hmm.
And he's also the guy who just shot out their tire, but obviously they don't know that. So he's still wearing what I thought was a bear suit at first. It's not quite that. He's like covered in homemade armor, and the hat he's wearing is literally like just a skinned animal. I couldn't tell you what kind specifically, but like, yeah, he looks spooky, hence the screaming when they see him initially.
Yeah.
Jerry's the one to be like, okay, calm down. It's the fucking tow truck guy. Like he realizes what is going on here. And we cut to a scene where, yes, Rufus is hitching in their car to the back of his truck. Like he's a helpful dude.
Oh, interesting.
Back at the house, Bill is walking around taking in this family's very eccentric living room. The decorations are honestly immaculate. Like, you know it's Halloween 24/7 in this house. And he asks if it's just her and her brother here, but she calls out from the kitchen like, nah, there's a bunch of us around somewhere. I think Otis is upstairs messing around or something. Like, who's Otis? We don't know, but okay.
Okay.
Now Baby walks on over with a tray of two hot chocolates topped with marshmallows. Mm. And she's got her coat off now, and her outfit is showing a lot of skin, which Bill is extremely attracted by. Well, yes, but I meant distracted. Extremely distracted by. But he takes the hot chocolate that she hands him with gratitude. And he starts making jokes about, like, the dead animal plaques on their walls. And she giggles and goes, you sure are silly for a guy with glasses. I like that.
Oh.
So, yeah, I guess, like, people with glasses just, like, don't have a sense of humor.
No, they're just nerds through and through.
Right. He takes a drink of his hot chocolate and compliments it, calling it tasty. Baby hits him back with a, that ain't the only thing that's tasty in this house.
Oh, dear God.
Now we're at the point where, like, Bill is just genuinely uncomfortable.
Okay.
I'm also actually pretty sure that he's into Mary, but they, like, have not gone anywhere. Like, they just, that's been simmering, and they haven't, like, taken the leap with each other, but they like each other.
Gotcha.
And yes, he was clearly attracted to Baby and, like, kind of like, at first, but now she's just, like, so out there and, like, forward that he's like, okay, I don't actually want to do anything, though.
You know? It's like, this is actually a little much for me.
Yeah. So he's like, look at the time. It's getting late. Where are they? Well, thank God for good timing, because we hear her brother start honking outside. They're back.
Oh.
Now we cut to, like, the whole group plus Baby sitting around in the living room with the movie House of Frankenstein starting to play on the TV. And Denise asks Baby, can I use your phone, please? Like, I got to call my dad and let him know that we're going to be late, like, even later now.
Right.
Baby just yawns and keeps her eyes on the movie. So, okay.
thanks for that.
Yeah, and that's when Baby's mom comes strolling into the room. No name. She is just called Mother, and like literally in the credits. And she says, we ain't got one. So she's got this feather boa around her neck and like keeps flailing it around. She moves like she wishes she was a fairy. And the group just cannot believe that they don't have a phone. Like Denise asks if she's being for real, and Mother's like, I used to have one back in 57, but there's not really anyone around here I feel like jaw flapping at no more. So she sits next to Jerry and gets like real close, like up close and personal with him. And Jerry literally leans forward to try and get a better look at her boobs. Mind you, Jerry and Denise are in a relationship.
Oh, okay.
So that's cool.
Nice.
But he's still shockingly able to string a sentence together. And he goes, hey, do you think the guy with the tow truck could drive us to a phone? And Mother just keeps on flirting with Jerry, like laughing at every little thing he says, giving him the eyes. But when she snaps out of it for a moment, she asks Baby to go check on Rufus and see what the status is on the group's car. So I guess that's a no to like, driving them to a phone, because she
apparently
just hysterically laughed at that and was like, as if, you know. And then in the meantime, Mother just encourages the group to make themselves at home, and they're like, we'd actually just like to go home, but okay. And this is our first survivability check-in.
Oh, geez.
Already
it's crazy how I forgot that that was part of this.
That's so weird that you say that, because I did too. I forgot to do the second survivability check-in, and then I got to the end of the script and I was like, oh wait, and I had to like go back up and find a place to put it. That's so funny.
Oh my god, yeah, we're trying to survive. Okay, so the opening scene, I mean, I'm not robbing a store. Nope. So I don't think that's gonna get me anywhere. Are those the only two people who have died, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm honestly going to go 97.
Wow. Okay. That's valid. I went with an 89.
Oh, okay.
Just because I was like, I know that I would go out of my way to stop at that Spalding's, at that gas station. And I know I wouldn't be robbing the place. However, the fact that like he just had a henchman come in with a sledgehammer at the ready to like smack someone down and kill them. It's like, I don't know. I would find myself at this place. And if it's just he's in That's the wrong true. Mood, he feels unhinged enough that I could be unlucky enough to just get a sledgehammer to the head.
That's honestly fair. Yeah. I feel like that's where my 97's coming from. Maybe it should have been lower, but I'll stick with it.
Okay. So Mother continues making conversation with the group, asking what they're doing out in the middle of nowhere on Halloween. And Jerry's like, well, I thought maybe we'd take in a hoedown. And Mother laughs. I don't know. I don't even know what that means. He just says he wants to like have a hoedown. And
hoedown, throwdown, like Miley Cyrus said?
That's exactly what he means, I think.
Oh, okay.
Mother laughs, and then she keeps laughing. And then Denise is like, no, he's just joking. Like, he doesn't actually want to have a hoedown. And Mother stops laughing and looks a little offended and, like, disappointed. Ooh. And is like, you were? Like, you were joking? And Jerry scoffs and goes, like, I'm sorry. I'm just messing with you. I'm sorry. And this pisses Mother off. And she's like, oh, I get it. Y'all just think you're too good for the simple pleasures of Halloween. And Mary's like, no, just a little too old. Which, let me say, there's no such thing. There's no such thing.
No. I don't like that.
But yeah, no, there clearly was like a little bit of condescension in Jerry like making the hoedown comment. Like, because, I don't know, he's like, you country folk and your hoedowns. Like, we're just trying to get rough and dirty with you guys. But he like, he doesn't mean it. And she thought like he meant it and was like, oh, you want to like have some fun with us? Like, okay. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, well, no, obviously not. And she's like, wait, what?
That's kind of rude.
Yeah. Baby comes back over with some popcorn and whispers to Mother that Tiny is home. Mother asks where RJ is. RJ is the tow truck driver.
Right.
And Baby doesn't know, but she says that Tiny said that he saw him heading down to the yard to grab a new tire. So Mary asks how long it's going to take until RJ is back with the tire. And Mother's like, probably a couple of hours. So... they start freaking out.
Yeah.
They ask if Tiny can just drive them to a phone. Like, we can just ring someone for help to pick us up. Like, you know. Mother and Baby start laughing hysterically again. There's a lot of hysterical laughter in this family. And Mother's like, oh, Tiny ain't got no car. He ain't even got a bicycle. And then she stands up delivering a monologue like she's in, like, a single spotlight. She's very theatrical. And she's like... I know you may think it's a little bit childish, but tonight is Halloween Eve, and to us, it is special. So you are all invited to dinner. Okay. Like, what are you doing at this point? Are you just leaving? I would leave.
But where are you going?
I don't care. I would walk back to Spalding's, probably, and be, because they have to have a phone there.
That's true. This is going back to something that I feel like I haven't actually felt in a while, where I do feel like I would feel very awkward in the way that I'd be like, I need to stay because leaving would make me more uncomfortable at this point.
Sure. Well, because at this point, they're helping you. They're like replacing your tire for you.
Exactly. And like, they haven't done anything wild. Like, they're weird and they're strange and they're making me uncomfortable, but they haven't done anything that's like this major red flag where I'm like, they're about to murder me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah. At this point, I'm still just like, just going to suck it up and stay.
Again, I wouldn't leave though unless someone else came with me.
Right. Of course.
Yeah. I don't know. This one is hard because it's like, it's dark and it's raining and it's a long walk. And I don't know. I feel like she just got so easily offended. Well, again, what he said was rude, but she's like being very forward about being offended. Like if I get offended, a lot of the times I hide it.
Oh, for sure.
The fact that she like visibly was like, okay, what the hell? I'd be like, oh, she's not going to respond well to me leaving. She's going to be offended by that. I don't know. It is hard.
Yeah.
We get a quick splice of VHS footage showing the tied up cheerleaders now bloody and dead before cutting to the dinner table. Yeah. I think it's only like three of them that we see. But yeah, a couple of the cheerleaders are just now dead apparently. Don't know how, when, where, what.
Okay. All right. Noted.
Yeah. So at the dinner table, it's just our main four sitting in their seats waiting to be served. And this table is huge with like a million candles lit on it. Definitely fire hazard level candles. And I love it.
Yep.
And on the plates in front of them are all these very artsy, maybe paper mache, like spooky masks.
Oh.
And I recognize one of them as Frankenstein's monster, but for the most part, they're just general monster mask vibes. Yeah,
gotcha.
And then Tiny enters the room, and he's not tiny. I would guess him to be at least 7 feet tall.
Oh.
And he's deformed with a mask of his own covering the majority of his face. And our group just stare at him in a bit of a shocked silence as he walks over and just takes a seat at the edge or like the head of the table.
Oh, okay.
But then Mother comes scurrying in with a little notepad, walks over to Tiny, scribbling away on it before leaning down and showing him the message, which says, "Get Grandpa." So Tiny,
I just got triggered. I got Texas Chainsaw Massacre triggered just now.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what's wrong with your grandpa? Like,
No.
You're like, please don't get Grandpa. Don't. Like, oh no. Tiny leaves and Mother's like, you'll have to forgive Tiny. He don't hear so much. It's his daddy's fault. I mean, Earl wasn't a bad man. He never hit me or nothing like that. But one day he just up and went devil on all of us. He tried to burn down the house. He said it was possessed by the spirits. And Tiny was sleeping in the basement room where the fire started. And I don't think Earl ever meant to harm us, but Tiny was badly burnt. His ears were destroyed and most of his skin. Bill asks, is that why he wears the mask? And Mother says, yeah, my baby boy gets shy around new people, but he'll warm up to you, especially the girls. He's a real lady killer.
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Then we cut to Baby doing her makeup in her vanity upstairs in her bedroom. And she's chattering away to someone, going, you're going to miss a good show tonight, but that's your tough luck. I thought you kids were all about team spirit, but you haven't done fuck all to cheer me up since you got here. And then she gets up and starts walking toward her bed, where we see that one of the kidnapped cheerleaders is still tied up and alive, with one of the dead cheerleaders lying beside her, like very blue. And ooh. Baby's taunting this living cheerleader, going, give me a B, give me an A, give me a B, give me a Y. What's that spell? And the terrified cheerleader answers, Baby. And Baby knocks her on the head with like a little voodoo looking doll and says, that's right. And then starts playing and like walking the doll all over her body.
Oh, ew. Yeah. Ew, I hate I that.
I know. It's gross. Back downstairs, Tiny and Grandpa have joined Mother and the core four at the dinner table. And they're finishing up eating dinner. And it's about to be dessert time. So
what did they
Mother
eat?
It looks normal. It, oh, okay. Genuinely, it looks normal. It's like kind of weird that it is just a normal dinner, but I think it is.
Okay.
And then now it's about to be dessert time. So Mother claps and is like, all right, now everybody put on your masks. We can't very well eat our desserts with our everyday faces exposed, can we?
Oh my God.
Which I kind of love. Like, I want to make everyone wear a mask at Halloween dinner or dessert. Like, that's so spooky, creepy. I'm going to light a candle, complete darkness, just me in a mask eating some ice cream.
No. I don't like it. I don't like it.
It's like, I'm not going to make it.
I want to know why.
They love Halloween.
No,
they take it very seriously.
Okay. Yeah.
So everyone puts their masks on before digging in, and Jerry asks, Mrs. Firefly. So yes, apparently their last name, this family's last name is Firefly.
Okay, like, cute. Kind of
iconic.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's like, Mrs. Firefly, do you know anything about the legend of Dr. Satan? And Grandpa perks up very suddenly at the mention of Dr. Satan. And Mother gets a bit uncomfortable, but she starts like, well, I'm not one for gossip, but... And that's when Otis enters the room, we're not 100% certain how Otis is part of this family. I know he's not a Firefly. Mother's reaction to seeing him come in is like, oh my gosh, Otis, you have no idea how happy it makes me that you've decided to come and join us. Otis, by the way, has like this very long white hair down his chest, and he looks like dirty, like literally dirt all over him, mm-hmm. and tired. And I'm pretty sure he's carrying a jar with a fetus inside it.
That's casual.
Yeah. And Keisha says to Jerry, I know about the Dr. Satan you're so interested in. And Mother couldn't care less about Dr. Satan. She sees the fetus jar. And
yeah. Let's talk about it.
She's like, oh my gosh, and you brought Leroy with you.
Fucking Leroy. Are you kidding me right now? They named it. It's just Leroy. Okay.
She starts kissing the jar.
No.
Before Otis carries it back over with him to where he takes a seat in one of the chairs at the table.
Okay.
And we're just going to move on from that now, I guess. Okay. So,
yeah. Good.
He goes, now, I don't know who told you your fairy fables about Dr. Satan. And Bill's like, oh, it was Captain Spaulding up the road. And Otis rolls his eyes and is like, that old shithog don't know shit. He tells his cute little tattletales to sell his junk. But I don't think you need to know. It's better that you leave here with your head still full of kitty cats and puppy dogs.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, a very rustic sounding bell starts chiming. And Grandpa stands up in his chair going, dinner's over, ladies and germs. It's showtime. And
what's the show?
This family has a whole chaotic stage room with like chairs for an audience and everything. And Grandpa starts the show with a little bit of stand-up. So now at this point, like, yeah, our core four have eaten dinner, worn mm-hmm. their masks for dessert. Now they're in the audience for a show. Are you still here?
Yeah.
After the fetus jar? Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about the fetus. How could I forget about the fetus jar?
Leroy is going to haunt you now.
I think only yes because of the predicament. Like if there was a restaurant next door that I could go hang out at, that's where I'd be. But yeah. It sounds like we're far away from a lot of like from anything and it's raining and it's night and it's like I'm probably still going to stay.
You know what? I might stay too. The more I think about it, because like you said, it's like it's nothing has happened that makes you think they're going to kill you, but they're weird and they're the type of weird and the type of unhinged where I'm like, I think I just need to play along with their game and then they'll get my car and I can get out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully.
That would be my thought, I think, at this point. And like there's four of us at least, so that would make me feel better.
That's true, yeah.
If I was alone, it might be a different story. I might just book it out of there if I was alone.
But then if we're alone, that goes back to the fact that we definitely wouldn't have picked that girl up. But we might have still... We wouldn't have picked baby up, but we probably still would have gotten our tires shot out.
Right.
I'm guessing if the family, like, if they didn't pick up the hitchhiker, the tire would have gotten shot out, and then the dude would show up and be like, you need a tow? And then we would end up here anyways.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Grandpa starts the show with a little bit of stand-up. I absolutely will not be repeating his stand-up routine.
Oh God.
But I'll just have you know that it's all about incest.
That's not surprising.
We return to the whole idea of exploitation horror.
Hey.
And for some reason, Jerry is laughing. He's the only one of the four enjoying this show. I'm like judging you hard, Jerry. Mm-hmm. And he really starts enjoying the show when Baby comes out in like a full showgirl outfit.
Like, sorry. Yes. She's a showgirl. She's in her showgirl era. Okay.
Very heavy, like old Hollywood makeup and a wig. And she performs the song. Well, she lip syncs to it. She performs the song, I Wanna Be Loved By You by Helen Kane. And I am going to sing this for you for a sec because it's been driving me insane because I know this song. I know it. And it like it's sparking like this deep memory I have of like some movie or TV show I watched as a kid. It's also possible that it's just one of those really popular songs. It was made popular by Marilyn Monroe, apparently. Mm. And I have seen I think it's in the movie, like Some Like It Hot, which I have seen. So maybe it's from that, but I swear that's not it. Okay, so this is how it goes. I wanna be loved by you, just you, and nobody else but you. I wanna be loved by you alone.
I don't know if I know it.
Oh my God, I think the version I'm thinking of is like sung by a man, and I don't know what freaking soundtrack it's on. When I have the time, I'm going to be digging hard to find it.
Yeah. When something like that gets to you, God, it's the worst.
It's annoying. And it's hard because like, I'm not going to get into it. I already tried to like dig into it. And then I was like, I can't figure it out. I'll return to it later. So yeah, she's singing that though and like dancing around. And she does some crowd work as well, dancing up on our core four. And when she starts dancing very sensually on Bill, Mary stands up and pushes her off, like telling her to get off of him. And Baby still keeps a hand on Bill, not backing off. So Mary pushes her to the ground shouts, I said, get the fuck off him, you stupid fucking whore.
Oh. Oh, right. Shots fired.
Crazy. I mean, it's crazy that she's dancing up on these people like they're friends.
Right. Yeah.
But whoa, like I could never be that person.
Oh yeah, no.
Well, I'm just not I'm never a name caller. Like even when someone's the worst person in the world, like I'm a coward. I could not say shit to your face.
Yeah, I feel like also, yeah, name calling. I don't know. I always feel like it ends up just being cringy anyway.
It's cringy and it's just like igniting a fire that I don't want.
Yeah, no, no, thank you.
Baby stands up, pulls a switchblade out of her dress and goes, I'll cut your fucking tits off and shove them down your throat. And mother drags baby back and tells her to stop. But thank God, we get a welcome interruption when RJ walks in the room, still wearing that animal on his head, and announces to the core four, your car is done.
No, it's not. What?
And mother's like, I suggest that you kids leave. Like, she's offended again, which, like, valid. Like, we just called her daughter a whore. So,
yeah.
Of course, our group is like, yep, we're gone. Like, can't wait to get out of here. This has been weird. Mm-hmm. So they all run out to their car. They get in, and Mary's like, I knew that girl was crazy the second she got in the car. Let's get out of here. So Bill starts up the car, and then Baby is like all of a sudden right there at the window banging on it. But everyone's like, nope, drive. Yeah, let's go.
Go.
Their tire does seem legitimately fixed now.
What?
But it's still stormy. So like Bill is panic driving all over the place trying to find the end of this driveway. They have like a junkyard yard and driveway. It's like a maze. And he gets to the end of the driveway. But then at the end of it, there's a closed gate. Like a wrought iron gate. So Bill gets out to go open the gate. And when he does, a couple of like the scarecrow decorations on the side of the driveway end up actually being Otis and Tiny dressed as scarecrows.
Ew.
And Scarecrow Otis comes out with like a metal pipe and knocks Bill out from behind. And everyone in the car sees this. So Jerry comes out to help Bill because at first they only see Otis. So he's like, oh my God. So he gets out to help Bill. But that's when Tiny also comes out of nowhere. And he's also got like a pumpkin head on, which is kind of cute. And he starts throwing Jerry around like it's nothing because like Tiny is like the big strong guy.
Yeah.
Both of the girls are freaking out seeing all of this happen. And with Bill and Jerry knocked out cold, Otis takes off his mask and starts to stalk toward the car. So they're like, oh my God, lock the doors. What do you do? What do you do?
I would freeze. Like realistically, yeah. I think I'd freeze.
Yeah. Because
I don't
think
I could move.
You're locked in on their property because it's clearly a gated property.
Yeah.
And they're just right there. Where do you run? Right. And oh my God, I think I would freeze. We'd be frozen together.
Every time I would like imagine a situation like this, I end up paralyzed in fear. Like, and
like being cornered in this way.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm just like, no, that's not worth trying to run. I don't think my legs would work.
This is reminiscent of a game that me and my cousins played a lot as kids though.
What do you mean, Cassie? What were you doing? Are you serious?
We actually got the idea from Scream, but I guess it works here too, is where, you know the scene in Scream where Ghostface is outside of the car and Sydney is in it and she's like constantly trying to lock the car doors to keep herself inside and he's got the keys outside, so he keeps unlocking. Me and my cousins would play that game where like someone would be the killer on the outside with the keys and then we would have to like try to keep ourselves locked in and so they couldn't get us and they pop up at the windows and like at the back and everything.
Oh my God. It's pretty fun. No. That literally sounds like my worst nightmare, but glad you enjoyed it.
I did. Okay. Yeah. So they're panicking and they're like trying to just like lock themselves in the car And Tiny takes his mask off too, which is like a big reveal for him because this is our first time seeing his face, like his actual face. And it's very scary. Okay. And he starts caressing the back car door before punching just right through it, shattering the glass. And then he grabs Denise and just drags her out through the window. Ugh. Otis whacks at like the front windshield with his pipe, with Mary just screaming in the back seat. And eventually he breaks through, and then he throws his hands up in victory and just like screams like, ah.
Oh,
it's
like, ew. Okay. Ugh. Don't like it.
That is when we cut to the next morning. It is now Halloween morning.
Oh.
I hope everyone out here is having a better October 30th than this group have had.
Yeah, I sure hope so.
Yeah. Or if you're listening on Halloween, I hope you have a better day than where this is going to go.
Oh, okay. My God. I'm scared.
We see RJ get in his truck and tow away the car that now is just all busted windows, you know, completely ruined from them hacking away at it.
The fact that they like fixed the car for this is insane to me.
Yeah, they're wild. Like they are very much like, we like to play games and we have a plot very much in place that we plan to follow.
I'm seeing that.
Yeah. So we also get a check-in with Denise's father, who's worried sick. And he calls the police to report her missing, explaining, she called me from the road near Ruggsville, a place called Spaulding's, and she said she'd be here about 11 o'clock, but she never showed up. And this officer is like, okay, yeah, we'll check out Spaulding's, but it was raining like hell last night. I'm sure they just are stuck in the mud somewhere. But okay, at least he's like listening and going to check it out.
Yeah, I think it's funny that he's like, I'm sure they're just stuck in the mud somewhere, as if like that would be a fine thing.
Right, right. I'm sure they just got into like a horrible, horrible car crash. They might be alive. Yeah. They might not be. Hopefully we'll find them.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, sir.
Then we cut to Mary, who is currently gagged and bound to a chair in one of the bedrooms of this house. She's coming to, and of course she starts screaming. And that's when Otis comes stomping in, all annoyed at the noise that she's making, telling her to stop because he's trying to work right now. And he's covered in blood and getting very angry with her, assuming that she's like never had to do real work in her life. Mm. Like nothing that he's had to deal with.
Yes.
He's like, okay, now I'm going to remove your gag, but if you make so much as a fucking peep, I'm going to cut you like a pig and make you eat your own fucking intestines. You got me? Mary is like still whimpering, but she nods in agreement. So he removes the gag and then she immediately makes a peep and she asks, why are you doing this to me?
Oh, yes. Yes. Good question, girly.
And Otis answers, like, as if he didn't just threaten her to keep quiet. So he's just like, oh, okay, let's have a conversation.
Yeah, let's chat.
So he just asks her, doing what? Like, messing up your day? Like, what am I doing here? And she asks, where's Bill? And Otis is like, oh, Bill, he's a good guy. He's been a great help to me, a real blessing. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better specimen.
Oh.
And we get a cut to some VHS-looking footage of Bill tied up on a St. Andrew's cross, like the kind that is shaped like an X. Otis and Baby come busting into the room. Baby puts on the song Brick House and starts dancing.
Love it.
While Otis gets down to work torturing Bill with knives, and then eventually he brings out an axe, and it's like, okay, we kind of know where this is probably going for Bill.
Yeah.
But that's when we cut back to Mary crying and asking Otis still, where is Bill? Where is Bill? And Otis is like, let's go see. And he spins Mary's chair around to face a curtain that he has up in his room and says, behold, and then pulls the curtain back and announces, Fish Boy. And we see the top half of Bill because he is cut in half.
Oh.
R.I.P. Rainn Wilson.
Damn.
But the torso, like up to his head, is on an artistic display covered in different fish food and who knows what else.
Okay.
And I think he also like carved gills into Bill, like he is a fish.
Nice, nice. Love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And his foot is also randomly part of the display.
Oh.
It's traumatizing, and Mary's in shock and like keeps repeating, this can't be real, this can't be real. Otis grabs her face and forces a kiss on her mouth, promising that it's all very real, and she screams in his face, fuck you, you fucking freak. Yeah. Good on her.
Yeah, honestly.
I don't think I could do that, like in that predicament.
Me neither.
And now we cut to Captain Spaulding's, where the police are currently rolling up to have a look-see around.
Okay.
And we've got Deputy Steve and Deputy George.
Deputy Steve.
I also recognize the actor who plays Deputy Steve. I don't know if you – So Walton Goggins, is that his name? Walton Goggins. I know him from White Lotus. He was like on the latest season of White Lotus. So I don't know.
I have not seen that.
Okay. So they walk on in, heavily judging this place, which again, in concept, I love. And they find Spaulding at the counter and like are like, I need to ask you some questions about some missing kids. And Spaulding's immediate reaction is, oh, I don't know nothing about nothing. I'm the kind of guy who minds his own business, if you know what I'm saying. Why would you say that? That sounds right. So suspicious. But
yep.
Anyways, Deputy George shows Spaulding a couple pictures of Denise, asking if he's seen her in the last 24 hours. And Spaulding's response here is, oh, yeah, not my type, though. I like them with a little more meat on them. The bigger the cushion, the sweeter the pushin.
Ew. What?
Like, why are you talking?
That's not what they asked.
And how are you so bold in front of cops? Like, do you have no shame?
No, I don't think he does.
No. And then he's the only one laughing at his own joke, and we all roll our eyes. So the deputies are like, no, seriously, what do you know? And Spaulding tells them that he saw her last night with a group of friends, and they were super interested in the legend of Dr. Satan. And they wanted to go out and find the hanging tree. And Deputy George is like, oh, yeah, how'd they get that idea? And Spaulding goes, well, he's like, well, I drew them a map that would take them down to that old farm road. Like, I figured it wouldn't do any harm and it's good for my tourist trade. So basically, he's like, there's no Dr. Satan. And he just made up a map, like, just to send them off on a little fun journey. Yeah, it's been fun for them ever since. These officers are absolutely sus on Spaulding, mostly because he's a weirdo, but they want to keep like on the search. So they ask him to draw the same map that he gave to the kids for them so that they can go and like trace these steps.
Right.
Meanwhile, Denise wakes up from a psychedelic Dr. Satan cemetery nightmare.
Oh, okay.
To find herself like in a waking nightmare. She is tied down to a bed and has been dressed up to look like a doll.
No.
So that's when Tiny enters the room with a tray of food prepared. And by a tray of food, I mean a cup of milk, a dog bowl, and a box of cereal called Agatha Crispies. I know, it's fun.
I like it.
And he sits down next to Denise and tries to spoon feed her the cereal, but she refuses, and obviously, like, instead she begs for Tiny to let her go. But Tiny just sits there and eats the Agatha Crispies for himself, and Denise doesn't give up. She keeps begging, Tiny, please just let me go. Tiny actually unties one of her wrists from the rope, and she's like, oh my God, thank you, Tiny. Thank you, thank you. And she unties the rest of the ropes binding her until she's completely free. And she says, I'm just going to go home now. And she starts to make her way up out of this basement bedroom. Again, Tiny just keeps sitting there eating his cereal as he watches her leave. But just as she's about to get out of the room at the top of the steps, Otis pops out of literally nowhere and grabs her and is like, where the fuck do you think you're going? And he throws her in this chain link cage in the corner of the room where it's like full of blankets. And when she's in there, like a bunch of random women just jump on top of her.
Oh.
So like there are three that I counted and they growl a little bit when they pounce on her.
No.
And then we just cut away to the next scene. And I don't know who those women are. Like, I don't think those are cheerleaders. I assume there are other victims just being kept as pets of this family. And obviously this all goes beyond just... It didn't start with the cheerleaders, you know?
Right. I mean, the title of the film.
Yeah. This ain't their first rodeo.
Exactly.
Now back with the deputies, they end up finding... Oh, but randomly, it's interesting, Tiny. I think he doesn't really want to do this, but he's just like muscle man who does what the family tells him to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think
if it was
just him running the show, like there would be no show and he would just let people go if he even got them in the first place. Now back with the deputies, they end up finding Bill's busted up car in a ditch on the side of the road. And they decide to call the information into the station. So next we cut to Jerry. He is duct taped to a chair in Baby's room, struggling and trying to get free. And that's when baby, dressed up in a cheerleader's uniform, comes in bright-eyed and bushy-tailed going, "Hey there, poopy pants. What's new?"
Poopy pants. Why? No, like, what do you – what is the thought process behind that one?
The way they talk is so goofy and, like, cartoon-like. It's so silly. Jerry starts grilling her, asking where his friends are and saying that, "You can't do this. You can't do this to us." Baby screams at him to shut up and then gets all bubbly again, asking, "Hey, do you want to play a guessing game?" And then she grabs a pair of shears and holds them up close to her face, asking, "Guess what number I'm thinking of?" And Jerry responds, "Eat shit and die." So baby cuts off a chunk of his hair and then shoves the hair in his mouth.
Ooh.
I hate that, yeah. And then she goes, "All right, one more question. If you get this right, I'll let you go. If you get it wrong, you are fucked. Okay. Who is my favorite movie star?" And then I said in all caps here, Caitlin, you have to guess.
Patrick Wilson.
Okay. Jerry,
is this an actual person?
Yeah, it is. Jerry plays along this time and guesses Marilyn Monroe. And baby goes, "Nope, Betty Davis. Sorry, you lose."
Yep, real person.
My guess was actually Marilyn Monroe. I played along. And then, because she sang that song and I knew it was made popular by Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, okay, Marilyn Monroe, say Marilyn Monroe. And then he did. And I was like, yes. And then she's like, "No, Betty Davis." And I was like, you bitch. Like, you knew he was going to say Marilyn Monroe.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess we're both fucked here.
Damn. It wasn't Patrick Wilson. What?
It wasn't. So yeah, she's like, "Sorry, you lose." And then she proceeds to shear off a huge top section of his scalp. Like, she just scalps him.
Oh.
Yeah. We are both scalped now, you know, because we got it wrong.
I don't want to be scalped.
Now back with the officers, they're getting this car towed, but they're searching the car before letting it get hauled away. And Steve ends up finding the car keys under the driver's seat. So they decide to crack open the trunk. And in the trunk, they find one of the missing cheerleaders.
Oh.
Completely naked, dead, tied up with rope, with the words "trick and treat" carved into her side.
Oh, okay. Trick and treat.
Which is weird because it's like they want this to be found, you know?
Yeah, which if they have – no, but they seem like they've been getting away with it for a long time. So
why would they? I don't know why they would do this.
Huh. Okay.
From here we cut to, I think, the two of them, like the two officers, at the shop where they brought the car in. Mm-hmm. And they're waiting for another guy to show up, an ex-cop that their boss is putting on the case with them.
Okay.
And neither of them are too excited to have company, but like whatever, because like this is what their boss wants. So you just got to do what you got to do. And when this ex-cop drives up to them and gets out of the car, we realize that it's Denise's dad. It makes sense as to why he's being allowed on the case. Like, he legitimately is an ex-cop, but like, he's got special interests here, of course.
Of course.
So now the plan is to drive out to a couple farms together in the area to investigate. So yes, they end up at the Firefly house. And once they're parked in the driveway, the gate is open. They get out the car and George directs Deputy Steve and Denise's dad, Don, to go ahead and scout out the property while he goes and knocks on the door to do some interrogating. So we cut to George knocking on the door, and inside, Grandpa and Otis are enjoying themselves just like watching a horror movie together in one room when Mother bursts in and is like, "Otis, cops are outside." So Otis is like, "God damn it," and hands Mother a pistol, instructing her to take it downstairs with her, but to play nice. And he's like, "And I'll go around back and take control like I always fucking do."
Okay.
Which also, like, hands her a gun, tells her to play nice. I feel like we're missing something here.
Yeah, what do you mean?
And he's aiming this specific comment, like when he says, "I have to take control like I always do," he aims it at Grandpa, whose eyes are still glued to the movie screen, and Grandpa just puts a middle finger up at Otis like he couldn't care less. At the front door, Mother answers, and when Deputy George tells her that he has a couple questions about a missing girl, she's playing nice like she was told, a smile on her face, saying, "Of course, officer, I'll tell you anything you need to know." Meanwhile, Deputy Steve and Don are making their way through the maze that is this family's yard. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's a whole junkyard. At one point, they find a shed that is just full of random shoes littered all over the floor and like hanging individually from the ceiling with string.
Ooh, yikes.
Deputy Steve gets jump scared by the family's dog tied up in a kennel and keeps raving on and on about how he was attacked by a Cocker Spaniel as a kid and dogs are dangerous. And Don's like, just like, please be quiet. Like, let's keep looking for my daughter.
Really don't care about that right now.
Yeah. And that's when they hear someone whimpering nearby. And back to the front door again. Deputy George is showing mother a picture of Denise. And she's like, yeah, nope, haven't seen her. Bye now. And she tries to shut the door. But he's like, ma'am, if I could just come inside, there are a couple other pictures I'd like to show you. And she's like, no, I don't think so. And again, she tries to close the door, but George stops it with his hand and insists, like, it'll only be a minute. And she smiles and is like, well, all right, I guess I can trust you with being a man of the law and all. And he thanks her and steps inside. Hmm. Back to Steve and Don. They follow the whimpering sounds to another wooden shed and open it up to find a barely conscious Mary tied up in chains.
Oh.
Along with three dead cheerleaders scattered around her like it's some sort of performance art.
Ah, yikes.
And Steve immediately radios George, who's currently sitting and talking with Mother in the kitchen. And as soon as George answers the radio to let Steve know that he's hearing him and like to like go ahead and talk to him, Mother pulls out her gun and shoots George in the head.
Oh.
Yeah. And then outside, at Otis's hands, we see both Steve and Don get shot dead as well.
What?
Yeah, all dead.
Oh, that happened very quickly.
Yeah. Second survivability check-in.
Everyone always dies right at the end of the act. I kind of do it the same way. Damn. All right. Well, like, imagining I'm a cop, right? Those three, I don't think they had a chance.
Yeah.
Based on what I'm hearing. They're doing their job. Mm-hmm. And the people just whipped out guns. Mm-hmm. The cheerleaders, it's kind of like, don't really know what happened to them, but I'd probably be dead.
Yep. Yeah, same.
Once they decided to like reveal who they are, I feel like I'm screwed because now it's just like they're just going crazy. But we still have three people alive.
Yeah, we have Mary, Denise, and Jerry.
Okay. I am going to say 53 now because one of the three, I mean, one of the four is dead. I think I'd be dead too, plus all these other characters. But we do still have three mains alive. And I feel like most of these situations, I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah. I pretty much had the same exact thought process, but I gave myself a 64.
Okay.
Just fair. Because I'm like, hopefully I am one of these three people. Well, yeah. We are girly pops. So if we're not a cheerleader, we are Mary or Denise.
True.
Later that night, Baby stops at a local liquor store and buys like 10 bottles of hard liquor because it's Halloween and she and her family know how to party.
Oh, okay.
And when we cut to the party, all of the family members are dressed in like pretty generic Halloween costumes, drinking and dancing around in their living room, except in the middle of the living room, Jerry, Denise, and Mary are chained up together and have been dressed up as bunnies.
Ooh, oh yeah.
Ew. Cute. So there's one missing family member though. Otis has yet to show up, and it's apparently because he's still working on putting his very anticipated costume together.
Oh, God.
Finally, he shows up, and for Halloween this year, he decided to dress up as Denise's dad, Don,
having
skinned him and wearing his face and chest as a mask. Yeah.
Poor and, Denise.
I know. And for like, some reason,
holy shit.
He and like random family members start shouting, "Who's your daddy?" At this point, I don't know. And they're just like really excited about the costume.
Oh my God.
Otis gets right up in Denise's face. And of course, like she starts screaming her head off when she realizes what she's seeing here.
Oh my God.
He also like starts licking her through her dad's skinned face.
Oh, what?
Yeah, like licking at her face and mouth and stuff. These are really disturbing.
These are the moments that I hate horror for like at least a hot second.
Yeah, yeah. Then Otis rounds on Jerry and is like, "And what was it you were after, Dr. Satan? Well, let me let you in on something." And he takes off his Don mask and then says to Jerry, "It's all true. The boogeyman is real, and you found him." The family's Halloween festivities continue with them leading their three remaining bunny victims out into a field on their property where we find a giant coffin waiting. and Otis orders Jerry to get inside. Baby, though, is like, wait, I need to say my goodbye first. And she forces a kiss on him before then stepping aside to let Tiny pick Jerry up and just plop him right in the coffin. Mm. And then Mary takes her chances and starts running off, which
ooh.
I think I would do too.
Yeah.
I wouldn't really think I would have a good chance, but whatever. It's better than just letting it happen at this point.
Exactly. At this point, like, it's worth the shot.
Yeah. So Baby's like, oh, no, Biggie, let me go get her. And Baby goes running off after Mary. Well, yeah, Mary makes it maybe like 30 seconds. And she ends up, I think, in a cabbage patch with like wooden crosses planted everywhere. Mm. Back with the others and the giant coffin, Denise is getting thrown in with Jerry now. And after the coffin door is fastened shut, they get lowered down to the bottom of a well. But at the bottom of this well, there are a bunch of living firefly victims, like living in this well water. And they start tearing the coffin to shreds to get in at Jerry and Denise.
Oh!
They look like literal zombies and they carry off like... They end up carrying off a passed out Jerry and then they just leave Denise there.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. It's odd. And it's like, oh, okay, this is happening now.
Yeah.
So, of course, down at the bottom of this well, Denise ends up finding like a whole tunnel system, stairs, wrought iron gates. And in the distance, she hears Jerry scream like, help, they're eating me.
Yeah.
She runs down a hall and at the end of it, she's sees what she thinks is Jerry, like walking slowly toward her in his bunny suit. So she's relieved for a second. But then as this person gets closer, she realizes it's not Jerry. It's just some random older guy that we've never seen before. And so she just like is scared at first, but the guy isn't like attacking her. So she's like,
yeah,
please help me, like begging him for help. And he holds out his hands for her to take. But before she can take them, she gets jumped by like a random zombie-like well boy from behind, and this zombie and like the bunny dude start tearing her bunny outfit off of her.
Ooh.
And then she's just left with the dress that she has on underneath. Mm-hmm. And then they both just head down different tunnels and leave her be.
What?
I actually don't know.
They just ripped the bunny costume off.
Yeah.
And then left?
Yeah. And I think it's also very possible that the guy who's also in a bunny suit, like, took it from Jerry and is wearing it for himself. But I don't know why they tore this one apart completely.
Okay.
And then just left. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. That's the – okay. Okay.
Yeah. So she tries to make her way out and finds it a good idea to walk down this long hallway that is completely made up of very real skeletons. The walls of it, the ceiling – This is really where House of a Thousand Corpses is coming into play.
Ah, yes, yes.
So she walks down this hall and it leads her to this lobby and operating room. And in the operating room, we meet Dr. Satan, who is currently operating on Jerry. And Jerry's skull currently has like three different shears stuck into it. And Dr. Satan is poking and prodding at his brain, doing who knows what.
Not the brain surgeries.
And in the lobby slash waiting room situation, we see three different Dr. Satan patients who have clearly been experimented on so many times that it's caused them to look like zombies. Oh. And Dr. Satan looks very zombie-like himself as well. Mm-hmm. Denise starts screaming, as you do.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Satan's gigantic deformed assistant comes bursting into the room. And this is actually Mother's ex-husband Earl, apparently, which I only knew because of the wiki page plot summary that I was keeping an eye on to try to help me navigate how to tell this story. And I was just like, oh, okay, sure. So nice to meet him. And Earl starts coming for Denise with like a slow walk and an axe. And Denise turns and tries to escape, but the doors of this room that she came through have been closed on her, and she's not able to get back through them.
Oh, God.
But when Earl reaches her and takes a swing with his axe, she dodges it, and the axe bursts through these wooden doors, which allows Denise to then crawl her way through them while Earl's axe is, like, still stuck in, the broken wood.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, above ground, the Firefly family has completely skip the fact that whatever baby got to Mary and like stabbed her to death.
Oh
yeah, yeah, in the cabbage patch of
okay.
crosses.
Oh yeah, fine.
I forgot that little detail. So Mary is dead. She's been stabbed to death by baby. and now the family like has Mary's body set up on a pyre. That's how you say it. You know,
I don't even know.
It's like P-Y-R-E. And it's like a lot of the time it's popular in like the old witch trials where like you set people on fire on this, I think pyre.
Mm, pyre sounds right.
Along with like a couple other spare dead bodies they have lying around that they need to get rid of at the moment. You know, they're just doing the whole pyre ritual.
Yeah.
They're saying some sort of incantation before they set it ablaze. And then back down with Denise, she's running around this maze of a tunnel system until eventually she meets a dead end. And of course, that's when Earl catches up to her. So he walks down to her at the dead end and takes another swing with his axe. And again, she successfully dodges. And his axe ends up swinging into a wooden post that completely breaks in half and causes a domino effect. And this entire section of the tunnels start to collapse in on itself.
Oh,
like
that's not
all
good.
Of its infrastructure tumbling down, and Earl gets crushed underneath all of the rubble. Denise also gets knocked out from like the falling debris. But the next morning, she wakes up.
Jump.
Yeah, and is just able to dig her way free, like up to the surface. Like she digs her way out of this whole tunnel system. So good on her.
Good on her. Couldn't be me.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking as well. So she makes it to the main road and like flags down the first car she sees. And they slow down and she hops in the passenger seat. And in the driver's seat, we have Captain Spaulding.
Oh, dear.
And he's like, sweet baby Jesus, girl, what the hell happened to you? And she's so out of it. But she's like, I got away. Spaulding is like, yeah, hey, I recognize you. Oh, there's a whole bunch of people that have been looking for your ass, girl. And she tells him she needs to see a doctor. And Spaulding is like, yeah, of course, just sit back and relax. But then Otis pops up in the back seat.
What?
With a knife. And stabs Denise before we then hard cut to Denise waking up on Dr. Satan's table being experimented on.
Oh, right.
And then the end question mark flashes up on the screen and that is it.
No, it's not.
Why do I end up with these movies with these weird ass abrupt endings?
No, wait, you're joking.
But that's it. No, that's it. The end? Question mark? Yeah, there is a sequel.
I mean, the sequel should have been placed at the end of this one, I think. But
yeah.
What?
Like, how are they going to get away with killing those cops as well? I don't know how they're managing. I'm so curious as far as a sequel, just like how they're managing to not be caught.
Yeah, they got.
With all
they're getting.
This.
They're getting away with so much and being so sloppy about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, well.
I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the end question mark is also how I'm feeling by the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Heavy on the question mark.
The question. Oh, my God. And, like, the whole, like, roadside attraction feels so random. Like, that – I mean, like, I know it connects to, like, the doctor and all of that.
Yeah.
But it feels so random.
That's yeah. I think it does feel like they had an idea for a location like that.
Yeah.
And they wanted to make it fit, you know?
Fair enough, honestly, because it does sound kind of cool.
Yeah.
I do think I'm dead.
Yeah,
like,
same.
Because this is, we say it all the time, this is one of those ones where you're like, but they shouldn't have survived. Like, how did she dig herself out of there? Like, there's
so true.
No way, like, she should have died. And then she died anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody died. Oh,
it's a rough one.
No. All right, well, third act, though, 7.
I gave myself a 4. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, like always gotta leave a little wiggle room unless the rules literally do not allow for it, which brings my weighted average to 37.3.
Mine was 38, my weighted.
No way.
Yeah.
This one, it's tough because if I'm there, no way I have a 37% chance. Am I definitely going? Yeah, actually, I don't think
we are there.
Yeah.
That's what is annoying.
There's no way you're not there.
Yeah.
There was no situation. I don't think there was a situation where I was like, I would have done something differently now that I think back on it.
No. Like, we just wanted to check out this cool spot.
Yeah.
And then we just drove away from the cool spot and got our freaking tire shot out and were taken in by this family. I wonder, the only thing that you can escape here is maybe they would let you go at the very beginning if you're like, oh, I'm just going to walk back to Spalding's actually. But then in the end, it's revealed here that like Spalding's working with them.
Yeah, he's in on it.
So like you're just fucked.
Yeah, honestly, I feel like because of that, it's almost like my third act score should be my score. Mm-hmm. Because the only reason I survived the first two is because those people weren't dead yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I gave myself a 97. That's the only reason I gave myself a 53, because they weren't dead yet. Where do they end up? Well, my final score would have to be my third act score.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, this is one of those where the third act is just heavy on the entire feel of the film and like knowing what you're getting into. I'm trying to think, like you could have, what's annoying is there's that payphone at Spalding's and she called her dad and you could be like, hey, can you come pick me up? But you wouldn't have a reason to be asking for that at that point.
Right.
Unless you're getting a bad enough vibe from Spalding himself, which maybe I am, but then I would just be like, we have a working car. Let's get out of here. I wouldn't be like, I need to call my dad to pick me up. Like,
So true.
So annoying. It's so annoying. So yeah, maybe I like that idea. I gave myself initially, I knew I was going to knock down from my 38% weighted. And I initially gave myself an 8, just knocking off a clean 30. But I think that you're right about the final act score. It makes sense to just make it your overall score. So I'm going to even lower that down to my 4% as final.
Yeah. Mine was 7. So
is it 5 or 6? I think it's 6. Yeah, because we round up.
Damn. Oh, man. Yeah, this one was rough for our abilities to get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, but this was weird. I kind of want you to watch it because there's just so much style. Like the style of this movie is so different. And that's obviously something that I can't get across. So like I would love for you to be as overstimulated watching this movie as I was. If you're ever in the mood to be overstimulated, this is the one to watch.
I just started laughing because I haven't opened our podcast on Spotify. And somebody left a comment on Haunt that says, in quotes, Nathan appears with a nail gun and starts shooting the devil is not a sentence I ever expected to hear, but here we are.
Well, yes. Welcome to I'd Survive. Welcome. Yeah, this is a weird one. This is a weird podcast. Sometimes I wonder what we're doing.
Here we are, guys. You know what? I wanted to look this up because the 6 felt familiar. We also had a 6 on Wrong Turn 2 very recently.
Is this our very first like repeat survivability score?
I feel like that's no.
Really?
I feel like we've had to have had a repeat before that.
You would think. It's been a while.
Oh, we had 50s.
Oh, okay.
We had 2 50s, but yeah, I just like the 6 felt familiar. So that's why I was like, let me check.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting that we have a 6 on wrong. You said Wrong Turn 2?
Yes, the second one.
This feels like it even lower than Wrong Turn 2.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Because Wrong Turn 2, I feel like technically, why wouldn't we have been able to run away? I don't even remember.
Well, that is in the middle of nowhere, but the difference between Wrong Turn 2 and this is we would not be going on a reality competition show.
Oh, true that.
So that's why I feel like this should be – it feels like this is right, but maybe Wrong Turn 2 should be a little higher. But Wrong Turn 2 gets crazy.
Right. I remember the end of like the third act in that one was like so wild that it was like, all right.
It's like we cannot survive this final boss. So
I'm dead. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. That was a side tangent.
No, all good. All right. Well, we survived the month of October. Well, hopefully. We still have a couple weeks to go.
Did we survive? We just gave a 6%. So.
Well, yeah. I was thinking like more in real life. I'm hoping we survived. As far as the episodes we covered, we're pretty dead this month.
I think we are pretty dead. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's too bad. You guys, you sound really upset. Oh, man. Well, shucks.
Darn.
You guys can check us out on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. We have a bunch of links over there, including one to our Discord where you can submit your own scores and let us know, would you survive?